So last week, we talked about what may possibly be the most interesting welcome rug in the history of welcome rugs.
Ruff, ruff.
Yeah, which is saying something. In the In God We Trust debacle, which has been repeating itself across the country, somebody put In Dog We Trust all over the place. And, you know, by typo, by accident. And it was put up for auction. As we talked about last week, it sold for $9,600. $9,650 goes to an animal shelter because of that thing. I think all's well that ends well. I would say that, except that now they're just going to get rugs that say In God We Trust. And if I had to pick, I'd rather In Dog We Trust than In God We Trust. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. My name is Sam Mulvey, and with me today is, as usual, Becky Friedman. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Sam.
And for the first time in a bit, Nick Kennedy. How are you doing, sir?
It has been too long.
Yeah, I agree. I was a little bit worried when the show was going to start up that we were going to have to open up the show with how many lashes Raif Badawi has received in Saudi Arabia, and I'm glad that so far it still remains at 50. But the reason it remains at 50 isn't because people isn't because of the new king and whatever. It's because it's for medical reasons. They want him to be punished. They don't want him to die. Thank goodness for small favors. However, seven advocates for religious freedom, led by conservative Princeton professor Robert P. George, offered to take the remainder of Saudi prisoner Raif Badawi's lashes for him. The group, who represent the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, contacted the Saudi ambassador in Washington, D.C., and demanded that the flogging of the atheist blogger stop, but offered to take 100 lashes in Badawi's place if the Saudi government refuses to end the flogging. Badawi's scheduled 50 lashes was postponed for the second straight week due to medical issues.
It's really amazing. We're looking at a man who, merely for starting a forum, for posting on Facebook, things that are skeptical, things that say maybe the world isn't as it seems, maybe we should look at something other than Islam as a way to lead our lives, is sentenced basically to death without saying we're going to kill you.
Yeah.
He has 1,000 lashes. There aren't that many individuals who withstand or withhold 1,000 lashes, even if they're spread out 50 a week.
I think that it is a nice gesture for these people to do this, but what would be the chances that the people in Saudi Arabia would actually go for this? And that's something that makes me really, really sad.
Yeah, it's a very strong statement, I think.
I think it's more than just a gesture.
Yeah.
It is a gesture with a statement. It's not meant to be, yes, we will ship in all of these academics from the United States and we will spread out this punishment. It is saying, look, people who are for religious freedom, and usually when you have someone that's the Commission on International Religious Freedom, that's often letting minority religious views not be persecuted in different countries. This is specifically saying, hey, let's stand up for an atheist who's being persecuted for his views. I think that's a powerful statement.
Well, I'd say it's a powerful statement, but I don't think it's the kind of statement you're going to make on the world stage unless you're willing to back it up.
And so, what better way to back it up than to literally take someone else's punishment for them?
Right, right. So I think it's interesting. And this is in the light of the death of King Abdullah, the king of Saudi Arabia, who, despite the lashings and beheadings for witchcraft and the not letting the women drive or letting women drive on a limited basis and
must be covered head to toe in black.
Yeah, the jailing for, I don't know that that's Saudi Arabia. I can never remember what the clothing is all over the place. The jailing for dancing to a music video was considered a progressive,
a
reformer in terms of Saudi Arabian politics. I think that's just, I guess, insane.
It shows how dire the circumstances must actually be in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's just, what do you do? That's the reformer. And they're saying the new guy is just going to be more of like the old guy. So I guess he's still a reformer, but
they've reformed as far as they would like to reform at this moment.
Yeah, I suppose. Moving on to the United States, though, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear an appeal that will settle the issue of same-sex marriage nationwide. The appeal, coming from the Sixth Circuit Court, upheld same-sex marriage bans in four states. While previous Supreme Court rulings have come down in favor of certain aspects of marriage equality, the court has never ruled definitively on its constitutionality. The decision is expected to be delivered in June. So I have to admit, I'm kind of feeling pretty good about this one. I have good feelings about this one because of the DOMA ruling that was last summer, right?
It was. And I also have good feelings on this one because, I mean, look at where the tide is going in terms of the circuit courts. Look at where each of the states that have adopted marriage equality, nobody has imploded. Nobody has, you know, the economies have gone up in those areas. You have studies that show that people seek further preventative health care, thereby, you know, lessening the burdens on their emergency rooms. There's not yet shown to be a negative impact from legalizing marriage equality in any of these states.
In fact,
not per my knowledge.
Don't quote me on this because I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, but I remember seeing numbers saying that there's been a clear economic boom.
10 years after the fact in Massachusetts, Massachusetts and Iowa were two of the first states to do it. There was a comprehensive longitudinal study in Massachusetts. Yes, it was an economic boom.
Yeah. But even here in Washington, more recently rather than less recently, they're still seeing it.
And I think that it's time for the country to move forward on this. Alabama, of all states, this week has decided that, well, a judge in Alabama has said, okay, this marriage ban is unconstitutional. Gay people can get married.
To be honest with you, I was not expecting the courts to go this way. If you would have asked me 5 years ago that in 2014 and 2015, there were a series of court rulings that essentially have created civil rights in this respect throughout the nation, I wouldn't have believed you.
I think we were saying somewhere up by 2025 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. It's surprising the progress that we've made in fixing this problem.
Is this a case of punctuated equilibrium?
And the fact that this thing is happening so quickly makes me really happy. I love this.
Yeah, and you know, given how the Supreme Court has ruled on DOMA, I feel pretty good about this, but on the other hand, I know the makeup of this particular Supreme Court. I'm not fully comfortable, but I'm kind of comfortable.
I hope that it's not just a quick grab of, oh my goodness, it's happening way too fast. We need to ensure that states have their own right to maintain religious monopoly on the institution of marriage, because that's really what it is. When you say that marriage has to be between a man and a woman, you're saying my own religious understandings of what is a union, what is a family, trumps other cultural expectations and trumps other people's rights.
Absolutely.
It's literally legislating scripture.
Yeah, well, you know, they might actually be in favor of that. I guess maybe marriage equality might actually be legislating some sort of scripture, you know.
Just not Christian scripture.
Not Christian scripture. You know what kind of scripture it is? It might be secular theocracy scripture.
Ooh, secular theocracy.
Yeah. Mike Huckabee claimed in an interview that America is a secular theocracy. The former governor of Arkansas was discussing a potential presidential campaign on James Robison's Life Today show when the host suggested that America is a secular theocracy. Secular theocracy. I just love that. Let's let that one sink in for a minute. Huckabee agreed, saying that it's a humanistic, secular, atheistic, and even antagonistic towards the Christian faith. He went on to say that the only thing worse than not being elected president would be getting elected without God's blessing. First and foremost, I can say you likely don't have God's blessing in running for president. I think I can say that with some confidence. So, you know, there you go. Especially if you're going to say, we live in a secular theocracy, we need a more Christian nation. You know, I've been talking about going a little bit more political on the show and getting more discussion. This is the kind of thing I would have done even before that decision, because he's advocating for dominionism. This is straight up dominionism he's saying here. The fact that that the United States doesn't play ball with Christianity exactly the way that it likes makes it a secular theocracy. I don't really get that.
I really like this secular theocracy idea. I mean, on its face, it's just a ridiculous construction of words.
Right.
I mean, it is an idiom that makes no sense. I think what he's trying to say, and one of our contributors, Dan, had said in sort of our pre-show that secular theocracy, probably he means that atheism is a religion or secularism is a religion.
Of course, yeah.
And we are a theocratically instituting this religion of atheism throughout the United States. But on its face, theocracy has theos in it. It has God in it. You can't have God. You can't rule by God if you are atheistic. And here's the thing. If you have an atheistic government, it means that you are without opinion on the on the decisions of religion, on the, you know, rulings of religion. You are without God in terms of your execution of government. At that point, would it be fair to say that the United States is an atheistic government?
I mean, the idea here that they don't play ball, you know, if you don't play ball in religion, if you say we're not going to make a statement on religion, we're not going to endorse religion in any way so that everybody can have their religious freedom, somehow is an endorsement of atheism.
Not at all an endorsement of atheism. That's a stretch.
But that's what they're saying, is that's the majoritarian, you know, privilege showing up here. That is, if this nation isn't explicitly Christian in its government, then therefore it's backing atheism, where it's just like way to not get it. So, Nick, how do you feel about your fellow bass player here?
Please don't compare me to Mike Huckabee.
Sorry about that. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, more news, catch up on some emails, that sort of thing.
Seattle Atheists and Camp Quest Northwest are teaming up to celebrate with a day of games and interactive science crafts. See fossils older than the dinosaurs. Teens and adults, test your knowledge by competing in Evolution Jeopardy. Kids get their very own science activity room. Go to meetup.com/Seattle Atheists for more information and to register your kids.
Darwin Day 2015 at the 2100 building in Seattle on Saturday, February 14th at 1 p.m. Go to seattleatheists.org for details.
Da-da-da-da.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Seattle Atheists and Camp Quest Northwest are teaming up to celebrate with a day of games and interactive science crafts. See fossils older than the dinosaurs. Teens and adults, test your knowledge by competing in Evolution Jeopardy. Kids get their very own science activity room. Go to meetup.com/Seattle Atheists for more information and to register your kids.
Darwin Day 2015 at the 2100 building in Seattle on Saturday, February 14th at 1 p.m. Go to seattleatheists.org for details.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Sam Olvey here.
And I'm Becky Friedman. After almost 4 years, our radio show Ask an Atheist returns to Seattle on KKNW 1150 AM on October 5th.
Join me and my rotating cast of atheists and freethinkers from around the world as we answer some of our favorite questions that we are totally not at all sick of.
Like whether atheists are even capable of feeling love or joy.
No.
Wait, what?
Catch Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey Sunday afternoon at 3 on KKNW 1150 AM in Seattle. Find them online at askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. So we've been getting some really interesting emails, and a few weeks ago we talked about the sign that was left by the FFRF at the Capitol in Olympia in 2008, and it's the same wording as a sign that appeared elsewhere. in Bullock County. Do we remember what state that is?
In Georgia.
In Georgia, right. And we actually heard from somebody from that area. This is from Don from Georgia, who writes, I am a local individual who received the permit to place the FFRF sign on the Bullock County Courthouse lawn. As a group, Statesboro Atheists and Secular Humanists, SASH, we too found the sign's message to be harsh, but agreed with the message. This particular sign was mostly a product of circumstance. I had informed the FFRF that a nativity was on the courthouse lawn. Attorney Andrew Seidel has had most of the background work to get a counter message displayed and then set their sign at no cost to us. We have already talked about what to do next year, and I have made initial contact with the individual who placed the nativity, surprise, surprise, a local pastor. The sign created a lot of online discussion containing the usual religious hate comments, but it also gained much support for free speech and the separation of church and state. Our hope is that the local government will rethink the free speech zone. We are also encouraged by new members and area support that was unexpected.
This is something that does come up from year to year, usually between Thanksgiving and, oh, about January 6th or so. And the FFRF, Freedom from Religion Foundation, does have a lot of good groundwork already done.
Oh, yeah.
Makes it very easy for local communities that are experiencing an infringement of you know, religious freedom, or rather the endorsement of religion through public means, for, in this case on a courthouse lawn, to protest that in some way that's constructive.
Yeah.
And so while not everyone agrees with the harsh message of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, it sort of sets that tone. And, you know, hopefully Don and his group, SASH, in Georgia, will be able to say, hey, you know what? We can build our own sign.
Yeah. For me, it was less about I agree with the message, too. I don't find anything factually incorrect or something at odds with my personal opinion. But in 2008, I really felt like they had done us a disservice by leaving that sign. Now, you got to keep in mind what was going on in 2008. This was me just moving to the Tacoma area. And frankly, this was the first time I had any interaction with the FFRF at all. So this is all I really knew, was that they lived in Madison. Well, a lot of them lived in Madison, Wisconsin. A pretty awesome town. And this sign.
Sign says religion hardens people's hearts and minds.
And
that's a tough message to send to people during their most joyous season of generosity.
I don't know. A lot of people find it pretty depressing. Me among them. I don't know about
the Christmas
you guys.
Season.
I'm not a big Christmas season fan. Getting down to it, though, that was then. It's several years later now, and 7 years later now. And I've seen the FFRF do a lot of good work, and my opinion on them has changed pretty significantly. They do, like he said, they do really good work. They've got this thing down to a science, getting these signs put up and having the conversation about it. And they're really willing to work with local organizations to get that stuff done, partly because they have to, but partly because this is how you build a community. So, I mean, it's a criticism, I suppose, the wording of that sign. But it, as far as criticism goes, it's like criticizing the color of the stripes
it's
on your
pretty minor.
Socks. Yeah. I mean, it's not a big deal.
I like, you know, that Don is encouraged by new members and area support that was unexpected. So you're in the middle of Bullock County, Georgia, and suddenly you have people coming out of the woodwork and saying, yeah, you know what? I've always really not liked this kind of government endorsement of religion, whether it's a nativity scene, whether it's the, you know, Easter egg hunt that is then, you know, kicked off by a very religious prayer, any of those kinds of things. And it's surprising sometimes the way that you see, the way that these moments and these events catalyze involvement from your community, from people of religious stripes and non-religious stripes, to say, you know what, we're with you. We stand with you.
And, you know, I say I think that protest sign is a little harsh, et cetera, et cetera. Then again, all things are relative. I mean, here in Tacoma this week, we live near the Planned Parenthood. And when I go check the mail for Ask an Atheist, I drive right by it. I drive right by it practically every day. And they're getting kind of big and stupid over at Planned Parenthood again.
The Planned Parenthood folks?
No, not, of course not. The 40 days of Lent or whatever people.
Ah, pray to end abortion, 40 days of life.
Yeah.
Sam, this is my neighborhood too. Does that mean I have to grab my pro-Planned Parenthood signs and counter-protest?
I think it might be a time to do that. Yeah,
yay!
I think we might be getting there. And it's, you know, before it was just these people standing with homemade crucifixes or whatever, not full size. They were just easy carry around, like, you know, garden crucifixes rather than hanging out with the Roman crucifixes, I guess.
And this is usually about 4 to 6 individuals, generally yeah. older people, you know, heads bowed and silently praying. I would say silently judging.
Yeah.
But that's what the usual batch
I would call
is,
right? it tasteful idiocy.
Okay.
But then this week, it's pizza fetus time. You know, there's people out with those, you know, abortion kills babies or abortion is murder, and then the pictures of people.
Usually, when you look into the imagery
and the pictures of fetuses,
the imagery that's often used on those posters are not particular. They're not specifically aborted tissue at all. That it is more of a shock image. A shocking image is a way to garner attention.
Now, the reason I said people is I don't really think about those signs. I just see them. It's a signifier of a specific type of thinking, that unless I'm engaging it to try and change their minds, I don't want to spend too much time in. But I saw this again, and I was thinking about it, and it's like, all right, if you believe that's a person, one, it's not, not even in the way you're thinking it is. Isn't that really kind of a horrible thing to do? I mean, if I showed up if I dug up your grandfather and showed up with a sign that, you know, death is bad. That seems really, really dark.
Very insensitive.
Yeah.
Even from your own personal perspective on what life is.
There are things I get and there are things I don't. And that's one of them. How often, when you were doing the Planned Parenthood defense type thing, how often did you see that?
You mean like the, as you call it, the pizza fetus signs?
Yeah. Very explicit photos meant to shock.
Oh, yeah. Every week.
Oh, really?
Every week. Yeah.
Okay. Cause it's, like I said, it's usually pretty low key up here in Tacoma. I'm gathering.
Yeah. And that's the reason why I was counter protesting all the way down in Olympia.
And I'm gathering it wasn't in Olympia.
That was what the, where I was counter protesting.
Yeah, it wasn't low key. See, it sounds like it was pretty high.
It was, the reason why I was doing that, why I was coming all the way up from Tacoma to Olympia was because they were outnumbering us like 5-1.
Ah, got it.
So, and right. they had a big box truck full of these gigantic signs with very, very disturbing images on them.
Yeah. Oh boy.
You know what's also disturbing? A picture of a resected gallbladder.
Yeah.
Also, a burst appendix.
I had an infected hangnail that looked pretty horrible.
Any kind of medical procedure will produce medical waste that is a little bit unnerving to people.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Let's talk about something happier.
I think, well, I don't know that I got happy on tap. I'll be honest with you. But it's just something happening in Tacoma, something I'm thinking about. Might be time to revisit that issue, I think, on the show. Anyway. A British judge has ordered an atheist father to take his children to Catholic Mass as part of a divorce settlement. The father claims neither he nor his 10-year-old son is religious. The judge, who mentioned his own Catholic faith during the hearing, said the father would face contempt of court charges if he failed to bring his children to Christmas Mass. The mother, who is non-practicing Catholic, has no similar requirements. The father's appeals have been rejected.
Now, is this just the judge butting into a family life?
It's kind of a judge's job to butt into a family life when you're going through divorce and custody proceedings.
Yeah.
But not in this way.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that this would be kosher, so to speak, in any kind of circumstance under any kind of review.
This isn't the United States. This is in the UK where they don't have like freedom of religion the way we've got it.
There is no separation of church and state in that respect. But the thing is that the state religion is not Catholicism. It's Church of England.
Right.
So in this case, it really seems like the judge mentioning the judge's own Catholic faith, saying, you know, I think that this is the pinnacle of good parenting. I don't know. That just feels like overstepping.
Would you like it if I was to go up to, I don't know, some parents and say that you must make your children listen to Major Powers and the Lo-Fi Symphony because that is the band that I like and they will like it and you will do as I say? Yeah, it seems kind of stupid.
It's surprising how little that see it from your perspective argument works. I mean, obviously, because it's privilege. They don't need to. You know, like when I was here in when we were doing the Pierce County thing, my arguments always said, look, I don't want you throwing your religion into this. And I'm pretty sure you don't want me throwing my lack of religion into this. Isn't it just better if we just don't do this? If we just leave this alone and let the religion or lack of religion stay in the personal space, stay at the level of the citizen rather than the level of the state? And no, we're a Christian nation. And since there are more of us than there are of you, you get to eat it.
you said we are a Christian nation. This is not something that's limited to the UK. Certainly, certainly. But this is not something that's limited to the UK. We've also had custody battles and custody issues in the United States that have privileged people of religion.
Yeah.
You've had an atheist father that has, you know, not been granted full custody or the custody that he was seeking of his child because he specifically did not subscribe to a faith, didn't bring his kids to church.
But was it an atheist father in the United States with a religious mother and the religious mother objected to the atheism?
I think that was the case. In this case, in the British case, the mother doesn't even practice Catholicism. So
Exactly. Ostensibly,
why is a judge saying that this is how you parent well by bringing your kid to church?
That's what makes this case so much more ridiculous.
Yeah, this is literally the judge just inserting his opinion into the lives of other people.
And thinking you got to bring your kids to Christmas Mass as if, like, yeah, maybe if I don't make you bring your kids to Christmas Mass, they won't have a Christmas. I think the UK is kind of like the US in terms of Christmas. People will have their ham and turkey dinner and they will have their presents.
On the other hand, Christmas Mass tends to be the least offensive of your
Catholic shindigs. Nice singing, yeah, and it's midnight and yeah.
You know, that brings in the crowds. That brings in the parishioners. So you don't want to bring out that you're going to burn forever stuff during Christmas. I mean, you know, save that for Easter or Ascension Sunday or whatever holiday. Speaking of Catholics, a secular group in Ottawa will hand out coupons in front of Catholic schools to inform students that religious classes are not mandatory. Members of Secular Ontario will go to an as yet unnamed Ottawa school and hand out flyers that look like coupons with the statement, "Get out of that mandatory religion class," followed by the relevant section of the Ontario Education Act. The group claims that schools fail to inform students that the classes aren't mandatory and often harass students who ask about it. So, Becky, as an educator,
I love this story. I love this story. I love this idea. I do not love that Catholic schools are able to get state funding and be state schools in Ottawa. I don't love that. But here's the thing. The Education Act says that if you are sending your child to a Catholic school, they don't have to partake in those religious education classes. So to be able to actually inform a child or inform a student about that and say, look, you can go do something different. You can go do study hall. It would be great if you had some other elective. Let's have wood shop during religious time.
Yeah.
Let's have, you know, study hall where you can get ahead in your studies, or an alternate kind of course curriculum that looks at philosophy and ethics throughout the ages.
So, I mean, we're talking about, this is religious indoctrination classes. This isn't like a world religion class. This is a class about being Catholic.
It's catechism classes.
Yeah, it's catechism classes in a Catholic school. So you have to keep, you know, when you think of, because I know I'm going to get an email about that, you have to keep that in mind, that this is specifically for the purposes of conversion. But they allow everybody, you know, anybody to go there. You don't have to be Catholic to go to these schools, if I remember properly.
Nope, you do not.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
I love it. I really would love to be able to get my hand on one of those coupons. It would be really fun. So I'm imagining the Monopoly get out of jail free card or something.
Actually,
like that.
I think there was a picture of them on one of the articles we looked at researching this one. And it was pretty well constructed. I mean, it was pretty flashy looking. Exactly the kind of thing I would want to be coming into school with if I had to go up against nuns.
Yeah. Well, good on you, Secular Ontario.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather sit in the library than go through this class, and here's the slip saying I can do it. Tee-hee-hee.
Okay. I'll be honest with you. I'd go to the class.
Well, of course you would.
Yeah, I would. I'd bring popcorn. I mean, that's kind of the way, that's the way I am. But there's one thing about willingly going to the class, and then it's another thing about having the right to not go to the class and then have the school administration, who, by the way, has control over your grade and whether or not you graduate, saying that you must go to this class or will harass you.
The threat of a child saying, I'm opting out of this particular class,
yeah,
and then having that weigh over them in, like you said, an administration that has control over your transcript, your grades, all those kinds of things. What if the, you know, headmaster is also your English teacher, for instance?
Right.
And you opt out of the religion class, what's your English grade going to look like? I'm to be put in that situation. It's, you know, for a young person trying to, you know, find their independence, find their voice and succeed in their schools. That's kind of really awful. So, again, Secular Ontario, besides handing out the coupons, informing kids of their rights, you know, we'd love to hear from representatives of Secular Ontario. How do you then support those kids that may experience that kind of harassment?
I think we might need to contact them.
I think so.
All right. So going from paying attention to really not paying attention. Lutz Bachmann, leader of the anti-immigration group Pegida? I'm going to go with Pagoda. Pagoda, in Germany, has resigned after posting a picture on social media of himself dressed as Adolf Hitler. Pagoda has consistently denied any Nazi sympathies, despite numerous accusations from their opponents. German law forbids the display of Nazi symbolism, which could lead to criminal charges for Bachmann. Pagoda has thrown rallies with more than 10,000 people protesting against Muslim immigrants. Yeah, I saw this. I saw the picture of it. He didn't dress up like Hitler. He actually cut his hair. He did the stupid hipster haircut.
Well, he combed it over.
And then the bottle brush mustache.
He gelled it over. Yeah. He doesn't have black hair, so he couldn't look too much like Hitler.
Yeah.
It's not quite a hipster thing. It's not the Bieber haircut or something.
No, I'm sorry. It's not all hipster haircuts are horrible, or the Hitler haircut. It's that specific haircut. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But,
And for what it's worth, Pegida is the German language acronym that stands for Patriotic Europeans Against the Islamization of the West. So you're an anti-Islam group or anti-Muslim group. You think that the West is being Islamicized. That's your biggest fear. And now you're going to dress up like Hitler? You're going to put on a mustache like Hitler and comb your hair like Hitler? Like
yeah.
You said, Sam, way to not pay attention.
The word patriot scares me now. It's weird. It shouldn't. But every time I see that word in a group of people in stories that we talk about on Ask an Atheist, it always ends up being a little bit crazy.
A little bit crazy. I really think that there's a great opportunity here for people who are non-religious to reclaim the word patriot. There's no reason the word patriot has to be aligned with overt religiosity,
yeah.
and fear against processes of Islamization, which really,
right.
I mean, I don't understand the fear there. And to say that if you are a patriot, you are against Islam is just rife with messiness.
Can I refrain from calling myself a patriot until at least after next week?
Fair enough.
So says the Seahawks fan.
Yeah, I'd say calling your football game, your football team, the Patriots, is a little bit presumptuous. But
I come from the land of New England,
and I blame you.
Yes, I will be gladly rooting for the Seahawks. I'm fine in my newly adopted region of the Pacific Northwest.
I speak football, not really my sport, so. Okay, go team, I guess, because it's local. But then again, if it works, I'll be hearing about it for the next year. Actually, if they lose, I'll be hearing about it for the next year. So I guess I'm just sort of stuck. So yeah, go Seahawks. I'll just sort of go with it. However, so we talk about Islam and problems with Islam. And we talk about why we don't believe in Islam like we don't believe in Christianity. And we talk about Muslim, extremists killing people. But then there's groups like this. And that makes it a lot more difficult for us to do our jobs. But I think we need to be aware of it if we're going to talk about this.
I think groups like this are proof positive that no matter where you go, you're always going to have your crazies.
That's
like,
true.
I used to live in England, and over there they had the UKIP people and the BNP and Britain First and these, well, basically racist organizations,
right,
that were against the Pakistani and Indian populations in England.
It's difficult to sort of divest in some circumstances a stance against Muslims and a stance against Islam.
Right.
I think in general, one of the difficulties that people who are critical of Islam face is this lumping together of, if you're critical of the religion, you obviously hate Muslims.
What's his face said? Gross and racist to say bad things about Islam?
I think that was what Ben Affleck fell into that trap in criticizing,
right.
Basically, since then, any voice that's critical of Islam. And really, the tough line that one has to walk is being able to critically look at a religion or a belief system and the effects on humanity, and still embracing people, that's people who are Muslim, people who are not. And it looks like in some of these demonstrations with Pegida, the German organization, is that they don't do a good job of disaggregating that. And it looks like they're not interested in doing so.
Yeah. If we're being critical of religion, why are you talking about immigration? They're really unrelated issues in a lot of ways.
They are anti-immigrant. They're anti-Muslim immigrant.
When you, but when you talk about Islam and you keep it about discussion about Islam and the destruction of destructiveness of religion all, you know, all over the place, that's being critical of religion. But then when you start bringing people into it, actual groups of people, once you start saying the word immigrant, now it's not about that anymore. It's about the people. And now you're making statements about the people and you're heading into racist territory. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, a moment of science.
...48 hours... ...24 hours... ...10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is, it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. So, think we'll stop getting emails about Annex Radio?
I don't know if we'll stop getting emails about Annex Radio. The Annex, like the attachment.
Yeah, he actually spells it
in
that one,
too. What the heck is Annex Radio?
It's, well,
been trying to figure this out for years.
It's been a gotten a few of those, and I got some people to thank, though. I'd like to thank Candace from Bremerton, Washington, Megan from Arlington, Virginia, Rich from Actual Kent, UK, Rick from Elma, Washington, and Linda from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who have all met Peggy's challenge this week. Peggy's challenge is the challenge to listeners of Ask an Atheist to help keep the lights on. If you'd like to contribute to Peggy's challenge, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button, take you right to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly to show production. I'd also like to thank Robert, who's a commercial you also heard in the book. Last week I was talking about Nye v. Ham, or the Nye Ham debate, a book by Ken Ham's organization.
Oh yeah, it was great.
Bill and I said Nye I wanted to look at it, and this week it arrived in the mail from Robert. So I imagine this might be a book report in our future.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, when you have Bill Nye saying, hey, Ken Ham, I'm sending you a book on science, right? Here's how to understand things a little bit different. And Ken Ham returns with, here's a book about me.
Yeah, and
says all that needs to say right there.
And actually glancing in the book a little bit today, it's Why I Won, My Summer Vacation by Ken Ham. And so I look forward to reading it. I'll be happy to tell you what I find, if I find anything worth reading. So, and now, Dan Lombardo is joining us. How you doing?
Hello, I'm doing great.
Fantastic. And you've got a moment of science for us.
Yes, I do. Today's moment of science is about one of my favorite misunderstood words, the word species. So what do you think of when you hear the word species? Maybe Darwin's finches come to mind, or perhaps our extinct Neanderthal relatives, or maybe just Natasha Henstridge in a hot tub? It's a tricky word, and even biologists don't quite agree on its meaning. We classify all living things using a taxonomic ranking system to understand their relationships and evolutionary histories. In high school biology, you probably learned that King Philip came over from Germany's stone, or something like that, to remember the taxonomic ranks of kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, and species. Unfortunately, the system has changed a bit since then. We no longer start at kingdom, but instead we begin at domain. But perhaps the best way to do this would be to start with us, human beings, and go backwards. Think of it like Russian nesting dolls, with species being the smallest doll on the inside. But stay with me, because it's about to get a lot more complicated. Our genus and species name is Homo sapiens. That means we are the sapiens species within the genus Homo. All of the other species in the Homo genus are now extinct, but once included Homo erectus, Homo habilis, and a couple others. The Homo genus is nested within the group Hominidae, the apes, which includes us and great apes like orangutans, chimps, and gorillas. Hominidae can then be found in the Catarrhini parvorder, which also includes gibbons and old world monkeys, and Catarrhini are within the infraorder of simiaforms, along with new world monkeys. Above that, we have the suborder Haplorini, which includes monkeys, apes like us, and tarsiers. Haplorini is nestled within the order we call primates, with our more distant Strepsirrhini relatives like lorises and lemurs. Primates, of course, fall under the clade Eutheria, which are placental mammals like us and goats and whales. Eutheria is within the Theria suborder, which includes all mammals that give live birth without shelled eggs, like us, and marsupials like opossums and kangaroos. And Theria, then, fall into the Mammalia class, which includes all those listed above, as well as egg-laying mammals like the platypus and echidna. Mammalia is nested in the Therapsida order, which includes all mammals and our extinct relatives like the sail-backed reptiloid Dimetrodon that probably came in your tube of plastic dinosaurs. Believe it or not, I've been skipping a few steps for the sake of simplicity, and to keep it short, I'm about to skip a few more. The order of Therapsida sits within the phylum Chordata, which includes all animals that have a notochord, which in humans develops into our spinal cord. Chordata are within the kingdom Animalia, which encompasses all animals, and Animalia, then, is in the domain of eukaryotes, which includes all living things whose cells have at least one nucleus. So now we know how a species is classified, but still, what exactly is a species? It's a difficult question with a variety of answers. Some biologists suggest that a species consists of organisms that share a number of particular traits. For example, humans. It's pretty easy to agree that humans are a single species, simplified by the fact that all non-humans in our Homo genus are extinct. But with other organisms, it's not quite so simple. Some organisms have overlapping local populations with a gradient of variation and extreme differences on either end of their range that do not interbreed. This is called a ring species, and a good example might be man's best friend. Canis lupus familiaris, the domestic dog, comes in a wide variety of shapes and sizes that we know arose from a common ancestor, Canis lupus, the wolf. Great Danes and Chihuahuas are both dogs, but if we left them together, could they really breed and produce offspring? Probably not. But if we allowed a large selection of various breeds of dogs to share a kennel along with them, several generations down the line, it's likely that we'd get a dog that had some genes from both the Great Dane and Chihuahua extremes. But now we're kind of mucking things up again, right? I mean, if all dogs are genetically compatible, if not physically compatible, then they must be a single species, yeah? Well, it turns out that domestic dogs are also genetically compatible with wolves, coyotes, and golden jackals, and fertile hybrids exist between all of them. So, fertile hybrids. That certainly complicates things, and it isn't just the Canis genus that has them. Members of the dolphin family, Delphinidae, are also known to hybridize. Many big cats, like lions and tigers, are capable of producing fertile female hybrids, though males are often sterile. And there are even artificially produced camel-llama hybrids called camas, whose parents come from two different continents and are separated by millions of years of evolution. So where do we draw the line? In conservation efforts, the most useful way to describe organisms is not by species, but by what we call an evolutionarily significant unit, or an ESU. An ESU is a population of organisms that interbreed, but do not breed with other nearby populations. This allows us to offer the protection of the Endangered Species Act to unique populations that cannot be replaced if lost, such as the southern resident orca whales of the Salish Sea, or the Nisqually Chinook salmon that make up part of their diet. So one more time, what is a species? Well, it might just be a rather outdated word, but it's a conversation worth having for the sake of the remaining ones.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Dan. If you have a science question, you can go to our website, askanatheist.tv, click on the shiny red candy-like button, and go ahead and ask it. And we are specifically looking for, if you have questions about biosciences, Dan's your guy. That's what he does. But we're also looking for questions about physics, astronomy, or anything you like. Actually, any science question at all, you'd like to hear it put on the field here on Ask an Atheist, we'd love to hear it. So, actually, species are a really interesting thing for me, because, it feels like we were kind of hacking it early on before we had genetics. It's like, we're doing the best we can, so, you know, this is all we got. Well, they look kind of the same. Are they related? I don't know. Are they having sex? Yeah. All right, they're all species. Right, yeah. where now, it feels like they're just sticking with names and almost sticking with species just as a convenience for us so that we have like lines to work with.
Yeah, I mean, I think an important thing to talk about when we talk about the Linnaean naming system, which is sort of what I summed up there, when we have genus and species and that, is that nature doesn't actually care about what we call them. that we're going to get hybrids between things that we thought were very separate species and that totally surprise us.
Right.
Atlantic bottlenose dolphins and false killer whales can produce fertile hybrids. They've done so twice in captivity, and they thought that this was just a result of you know, being captive together. But now hybrids have been found in the wild. Here in Puget Sound, we have Dull's porpoise and Harbor porpoise that are also hybridizing, making it really difficult for those of us who are out there trying to figure out what the population size is. Well, when you can't tell a hybrid between the two species from one or the other, it really complicates which one needs protection or which one fits where in the ecological niche. And then, you know, are these hybrids, are they sticking to the pod of animals that they belong with as far as social behavior and diet goes? Mm-hmm. Or are they going with their compulsions from the other side? And, you know, while all the Dull's porpoises are eating herring, maybe this one hybrid is eating surf smelt instead and making all of us trying to publish papers or something look foolish. But nature doesn't care about naming.
So genetics have basically given us, where before we had clearly defined boxes or biblical kinds, if you would, mm-hmm. It looks like with species now, like individual species are more like notes on a scale where you've got frequencies between the whole notes and, you know, the spectrum is continuous.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But we have these things and they're interesting relationships you can make between the notes and you can modify the notes, but that doesn't make musical notes an atomic concept.
I think one of the interesting things that this brings to light or puts in stark contrast is how different fields of science can come together and either confirm each other's conclusions Or they can contradict each other, leading to more scientific investigation. You have the classification based on phenotype. Like Sam said, do they look the same?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's kind of upended by genetics, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So we're actually seeing in Washington State a similar sort of conflict with Kennewick Man. I don't know, Dan, if you're familiar with that case at this moment.
A bit.
So what I've been hearing about in terms of Kennewick Man was a set of remains that were found, that were unearthed in Kennewick, and you have someone from a physical anthropological field saying this person is definitely not from a native population, and you have genetic analysis that says, yes, this person is definitely from a native population, and sort of how those two fields of science come together. Dan, can you kind of, like, I don't know, take us through which one is right? I mean, when you have fields that conflict with each other, how do you figure that out? How do scientists address that? Not specifically with Kennewick Man, but how do you deal with when two fields of science come to different conclusions?
That's a great question. I think what it comes down to is who has the most and best facts when they right. publish, when they put their evidence out there. But one of my colleagues on the fisheries research project I'm doing now wanted to point out, when I was talking about writing this piece, that radiation, adaptive radiation of species, is another problem. As we're overfishing some species and others are rushing to fill in the niche, well, maybe one species that's rushing in isn't just filling in one niche. It's
right,
also diversifying.
For the record, we're not talking about fish emitting gamma rays, right?
No. Okay. We're talking about fish adapting to new environments and new ways of life that have been opened up by us removing others.
Sure.
And, so we may have some perch that are starting to live like rockfish, and meanwhile the ancestors of these perch lived like perch, but another offshoot from the same lineage is maybe a group of perch that's starting to live like herring instead, and so you've got this branching off.
Not only phenotype, not only genetics, but also behavioral traits.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's where the ESU concept comes in. ESU is like Sam said, are they having sex? Does this population interbreed with only themselves, or are they breeding with other populations elsewhere?
Right.
And if this population is entirely contained, what I would say genetically contained, only breeding within this population, then we would call it an ESU, an evolutionarily significant unit.
Evolutionarily significant unit.
Correct.
That sounds like an invasion of computer science into your...
It does. Yeah. And it gets kind of fun and wacky, because then you'll find there are lakes in Africa, freshwater systems that are full of a type of fish called cichlids.
Okay.
These are very popular aquarium fish with hundreds of varieties. And in one of these lakes, if you go there and talk to ichthyologists or aquatic food web biologists, they'll tell you that there are either 6 or 600 species in this lake.
Seems to be a bit of a discrepancy there.
Right.
All right. So this is a question, I don't know if you'll be able to answer it, but it's something I wondered. With, we went from the Linnaean concept to something with genetics in it. Has there been a situation where, like, hey, this slime mold, we sequenced its genome and it's actually a type of sausage? It totally goes over here. Has that kind of, like, vast movement of organisms happened within this tree of life?
Absolutely, yeah, and that's one of the reasons that we have domain now as well as kingdom. Domain is above kingdom, and domain includes prokaryotes, eukaryotes, and archaea.
Okay.
With eukaryotes, those cells that have a nucleus, being most closely related to archaea, which are sort of like bacteria made out of totally different structures, except that they still have DNA.
Okay, so they've got DNA, but...
They've got DNA, but they make their cell wall out of a completely different compound. They use different enzymes to carry out their cellular functions than what we think of as eubacteria or true bacteria.
That's really... Okay. Where do you find archaea, actually?
All over. There's probably millions of them in this room with us right now.
Okay, because I don't...
They're on your skin, they're in your body.
For some reason, I was thinking extremophiles, like maybe you'd find them in a rock or something like that.
That was where they were first sort of identified, and then it was sort of later found that they're kind of everywhere.
Fantastic. Wow, genetics is pretty good. Like I said, if you have a science question, you can go to askanatheist.tv and let us know what's going on. And we're coming to the top of the hour. And very quickly...
I know.
Huh?
Let's do this. Dan.
Huh?
My question is very simple. I invite you Will you be born again and become a new creature in Christ the same way I have, so that you can know him the way I do?
Oh, define new creature.
Yeah, Kyle from the internet says, well, apparently they sequence his genome and he is a type of sausage.
How about that?
Yeah, who knows?
I would just like to point out that this email of a very simple question was originally 370 words long.
Was it 370 words long?
Yes, it was.
Maybe we'll have to answer this next time. This is Ask an Atheist with Sam Olby. My name is Sam Olby. I'd like to thank Dan Lombardo, Rebecca Friedman, and Nick Kennedy. I'd also like to thank...
Chris Coleman. Phil Whitfield.
Phil Whitfield, Steve Siemens, and Dave Roulette, who did the writing for this episode. You can go to askanatheist.tv. You can go to questions at askanatheist.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7042. See you next week.